Good morning, EMF Camp. You're all looking very perky, considering everything that happened last night. My name is Terence Eden. I used to be a civil servant, but I'm feeling a lot better now. Back when I used to work for the government, I was the head of open technology for NHSX. Amongst my jobs, I was responsible for open sourcing the COVID contact tracing app, this one here. I'm sure you all had this on your phone at one point, and it probably sent you lots of pings saying somewhere nearby you had coughed. So I'm going to discuss what I learned from the experience of open sourcing a major piece of national infrastructure and how you can use those lessons when it comes to open sourcing your own important work. But first, I want to take a moment to acknowledge the huge toll this horrible disease has taken on everyone. I'm going to try and make this talk interesting and entertaining, but I realise everyone here has been affected. We've all lost friends and loved ones. So I do invite you to take a moment just to remember all those people who should be at EMF camp, but aren't here today. By way of a content warning, this talk will obviously discuss death, cyberbullying, and it does feature clips of various Conservative Party politicians. With that, as I said, these are my recollections. That's me there in the background at the launch of NHSX. There were hundreds of people involved in this project. All of them doing a brilliant job in ridiculously difficult circumstances. But I'm here to describe my memories, what I learned. I don't want you to think this was the Terence Eden show. I was a cog in a machine, but hopefully a useful cog. And actually, the story starts before the pandemic, before anyone had even heard of COVID-19. I'd spent my time as head of open technology accidentally laying the groundwork. I spoke around the country about open source, open standards, open data. I made it a point that in every single meeting I was in, I would say, could we open source that? Oh, is there an open source? Oh, could we put that on GitHub? People were probably sick of me saying the words open source, but it helped normalize it. It helped just normalize that idea that we should work in the open. The other thing I did, as well as the blogging and the tweeting and going to conferences, was I talked to our friends in procurement, because if they don't know about open source and, you know, how you can procure it, then people can't buy open source products. So let that be a lesson to you. Talk to your friends in procurement. And also, we spoke to our bosses, including politicians. We made sure they heard us talking about open source, normalizing it. We didn't want them thinking, oh, open source, oh, that's scary, that's new, oh, that's a bit of a risk. No, this is just the way we do things. The end result of all of this was a culture change that made being closed impossible. When the pandemic hit and we were all sent to work from home, we started discussing a contact tracing app, but there was no discussion of whether it should be open source or not. It was just always going to be open. That's just the way we did it. That was the culture of the organization, to release stuff as open. I mean, we discussed where to host it and licensing and things like that. But that's what I really want you to take away from this talk, is don't make open source sound scary or radical or esoteric, even though it is all those things. You want it normalized so that people around you just, oh yeah, open source, yeah, that's what we do. Anyway, I was sent home, working from home for the foreseeable future, and I was given a very specific mission. It was Elbert Hubbard who said, all you need to achieve great things is a definite plan and not enough time. Well, we had a definite plan. We had a publicly stated goal, which was get the source code published for when the app was live in the public's hands. And having a deadline is so important. Having a public deadline is so important. I can't stress that enough. If we'd said, we'll open it later, we'll open it when it's ready, it will be open one day, it would never have happened. There would have always been a reason not to do it. But we made public commitments. We got politicians to say in the press, and of course the app will be open source, which is, you know, getting politicians to say anything is great fun. But we deliberately telegraphed intent. It just became impossible for us not to do this. So that's another lesson I'd like you to take. You know, make a culture which makes this possible and make commitments so that you can't go back on your word. The pressure on the team to do this, you know, was enormous. There wasn't enough time. And it wasn't helped by a massive shift in our plans. So give me a cheer if you'd like to see a Barbie meme. is the right answer. You've all been there. You start working on a project, it's going brilliantly, and then some finds a flaw with what you're doing, and you have to scrap everything and start again. In our case, we had developed our own Bluetooth technology for contact tracing. This was before Google and Apple had even started talking about theirs. We developed ours, and it was working, but we were running up against problems with the platforms. Let's just take a look. So there's audio on this slide coming up.
Because of this testing, we discovered a technical barrier that every other country building their own app is also now hitting. We found that our app works well on Android devices, but Apple's software prevents iPhones being used effectively for contact tracing unless you're using Apple's own technology.
You can argue about whether politicians have our best interests at heart, but ultimately they are democratically accountable, as they are about to find out. However, American megacorporations are not democratically accountable. You can use a Freedom of Information request to get source code from the government, but good luck doing that against Google and Apple. The original technology that we had developed ourselves, it worked, and it worked pretty well. And the source code is still open source if you want to go and play with it. But you have to deal with reality. Sometimes you just can't afford to be ideologically pure, because ideology doesn't get you that far. What's actually needed is incremental change to get you towards your goal, which is a bit boring, but it works. If we'd refused to face reality, I think that could have been disastrous for the app and for the pandemic response. But we showed that how open source was generally useful, and then we switched to, the app was open source, but we switched to the Google Apple exposure notification framework. And I don't know if that is the right choice. So we're going to take a vote. So the question is going to be, we should have kept the app 100% open and under our control, or we were right to move to Google Apple. So put your hands up if we should have kept everything 100% open source. Okay, thank you. And hands up if we were right to use Google Apple notification framework. Okay, slightly better than the Brexit referendum result there. But you know, look, this is the choice that every open source project makes, which is how much control do you cede, whether that's running on some proprietary cloud thing or integrating some closed source library. These are the choices that bind you, and these are the choices which piss people off. Give me a cheer if you'd like some nostalgic 80s toys. Yay, it's trolls. It is easy to bully people online. It's fun, too. In a world of lockdown, with nothing to do, some people turned their frustrations to us. Anyone who attended Matthew Garrett's talk on the XZ back door will know it's terrifyingly easy to bully people in open source. Our number one job as a community has to be to find a way to protect ourselves and our colleagues and our friends. Working in the open makes you a target. Working in the open for the government makes you fair game, according to some people. Here's a good example. These are genuine tweets that were sent to us around the time. I've lightly edited them and removed people's identifying information. So at the bottom, someone is asking a fairly sensible question, which is, should the NHS build their own app, maybe? And then some man says, you can read what it says. This is the worst thing about working in the open. You know, if you're a public servant, you can't reply to things like this. If you work for a big corporation, your PR team do not want you wading into the fray with this. And that's the worst thing about working on a big open source project, is people just misrepresent your motives and your attitudes. For the record, I did not go to Eton. I don't think anyone from Serco or the Vote Leave campaign worked on the app. They wouldn't even let me email Dominic Cummings. Other than that, this is the power of the superpower of open source. It makes it pretty easy to say, all right, show me where. When people say, oh, the app's going to track you by GPS all the time and upload it, you can go, all right, show me in the source code where. I believe that open source is a moral good. You might have heard the phrase public money, public code. If it's developed with taxpayers' money, taxpayers have a right to see it. I completely agree it's a good moral choice. But there's also a cynical and practical reason in that it cuts off lots of complaints. Now, of course, not everyone was satisfied with our approach. This is another genuine note. I have 40 years of software experience, including top-level Apache projects. I think I can tell the difference between open source and a PR stunt. Thank you, random man. When you block people like this, they complain to your boss. I mean, if you mute them, they instigate pylons. I get in the early days of the pandemic, people were scared and frustrated, but it's very difficult to maintain enthusiasm for a project when people are sending messages like this. I had people publicly denouncing me, writing blog posts about how I was aiding and abetting, and, you know, sending me poisonous DMs. It was an absolutely horrible period of my life. And the lesson here is you've got to protect the people around you. You've got to protect the people working on your open source project. Let them know that they have support. It was a great philosopher who said that no matter how much the haters hate, you've just got to... There we go. Karaoke later. For every message like this, there were hundreds of positive and supportive ones. And, you know, for everyone where people said, oh my God, it's going to be open source, we sent those to our bosses and said, look, we definitely did the right thing here. But maybe this guy has a point. What is and isn't open source? Now, I will be delighted to spend hours with you discussing the merits of various open source licenses, but the price is one pint for me for every open source license you wish to discuss. Internally and privately, we had deliberations on licenses, and we chose, does anyone know what we chose? No? MIT. Woo! Yeah. Now, why did we choose that? Well, the first reason is laziness. The Government Digital Service released most stuff as MIT and other departments did. Never underestimate the power of groupthink. They've said it's okay, so we can do it. Great. Second, government wasn't trying to make a profit off this app. We didn't need to control it or prevent other people using it in certain ways. So we didn't need like the virality of the GPL, AGPL, things like that. Thirdly, and this is most importantly, the MIT license is short. It is really short. And when you're dealing with government lawyers who charge by the word, brevity is important. And it just means ordinary people can read it and understand it. But did we make the right choice choosing MIT? Obviously, some people disagreed, so we're going to take another legally binding vote. So we'll do yes, we're right to do MIT, and no, we should have chosen a different license. So hands up, we were right to choose the MIT. Pretty good, thank you. And hands up, we should have chosen something else. Like one person over there. Well, two people. Okay, if you two would like to explain why we were wrong, please buy me a beer afterwards. Of course, you know, we released this and the internet had opinions. Here's someone with a very strong opinion. If it was AGPL, we'd get the back end. MIT is a license of choice for people who don't understand open source and public goods. So yeah, I don't know, maybe I don't understand these things. But it highlights an interesting point. The license that you choose for your open source project will play into the public's perception of what it is for. And when you're not public with your choice about why you chose a particular license, people will not consider that you thought of any trade-offs or did this or did that. They will ascribe malice where at best there was indifference. Look, it gives me no pleasure to say this whatsoever, but this person was wrong. They were completely wrong. We released the front end, the back end, the Docker images, the tests, the documentation, the API, everything. The MIT lets you do that. That was cathartic. But it brings up a fundamental question. How do you explain to people, normal people, not you, how do you explain to normal people what open source is? I had the number 10 press team ask me why we were releasing two different versions of the source code. So what do you mean? They said, well, you're releasing a version of the source code for Apple and a version of the source code for Android. Why are they different? That's a pretty good question, I think. And now look, I can give a good hour lecture on the architectural differences between those two platforms. I do not know how to condense that into a media-friendly paragraph. we also had to justify all sorts of things. You know, we had to justify hosting it on GitHub, which is Microsoft, boo, versus, you know, spinning up our own GitLab, waste of taxpayers' money, boo. I think we did a pretty good job of explaining why we made most of our choices, including GitHub. But obviously some people still weren't happy. Again, this is another, I lightly edited and removed the personal details from this. Someone who, we shared the link saying, you know, github.com/NHSXBodyBar. And this person said, GitHub is the shareware developers free-for-all programmer site, e.g. the COVID app was written by hobbyists. Now, it is tempting to laugh at people like this, but how do you explain to everyone in your community what open source is? You know, we were dealing with statisticians and doctors and politicians, all of whom were very good at their jobs, but we don't know what open source is. Why should they care? So we had to develop primers so that we didn't have to keep having the same arguments. Open source is a journey, and it is your responsibility to bring people along for the ride. Now, cheer if you would like a very obscure 1990s comedy reference. That's you, that is. Two fans of, Badil, Newman and Badil there. Now, normally on an open source project, every time someone makes a change to the code and commits it, it goes into the Git history, and you can see line by line which individual person has committed which change. We didn't do that. We made the difficult decision to squash all of our history. Despite being open source, when you go to the Git repo, every time there is a new release of the app, we did a new release of the source code. So you can see the difference between the releases. You can't see the individual Git commits. Now, why did we do that? Firstly, code security. We were worried that maybe someone would accidentally commit a secret key, or there would be something in there that we didn't want getting out, or a vulnerability, debug code. Yes, that is security by obscurity, but we were worried something would slip through. And the second was the privacy of the people working on the app. We didn't want individuals to receive abuse. We know that online communities can be toxic. Do you want to be Twitter's main character because you forgot a semicolon somewhere? Or why wasn't this person working late in the evening? Well, you know, they've got a life. We also didn't want individuals to be sponsored by phishers or state-sponsored attackers. So with each new release, we compressed the history and put up a new version. Again, I don't know if that was the right thing to do. I think it was justifiable. I'm not sure if it was right. So we're going to take another vote. Yes, another vote. And so we're going to say we were right to squash the Git history, or we should have released every individual Git commit. So hands up, we were right to squash the history. That's pretty good, thank you. And those who think we should have released every single Git commit, a fair few of you. Perfectly justifiable. Like I say, I don't know whether we made the right choice, but it allowed us to get things open source. This is another interesting problem that we faced. Comments are a natural part of source code. For those of you unfamiliar, they're little messages that programmers leave to explain what something in the source code does. And they are vital to understanding what the code does. So we wanted to leave in comments, and by and large we did. But the problem is programmers think they're funny. So we had to say, do not put anything in the source code that you do not want on the front page of the Daily Mail. And, you know, I mean, incidentally, I would bloody love it if the headline on the Daily Mail was "Fury as the government mandates tabs over spaces and it's your children who are paying for it." Be careful what you wish for. We had people who left in comments about frustration, oh, this bloody API doesn't work, or inadvisable political thing, oh, Barnard Castle, or personal information, you know, need to tell Sue to fix that thing over there. So we had to go through a slightly tedious process to remove them. The problem is that even accurate technical comments can be slightly misleading. We had a process which spawned a bunch of sub-processes, and they would sometimes time out, and we had to restart. You know, this is very boring, normal stuff, and this was the comment that was left. When the signal is received, terminate all non-responsive children, do not log any data, and spawn a new demon. Now, I know what they're talking about, and you know what they're talking about, but, you know, if you've been ingesting a lot of COVID 5G conspiracy theories, this doesn't look good, does it? So this is a This is a lesson you need to learn. If someone wanted to maliciously misunderstand your comments, how would they do that? How do you develop a culture where your coders write sensible comments, non-inflammatory comments, comments which aren't going to get you into trouble? One of the ways that we allowed people to talk about the codes that we were doing was we had blog posts, people wrote to their MPs to talk about the source code and they forwarded it to us. We had comments on our blogs and obviously social media. We also had GitHub for technical issues. We were open if you'd found a bug, you could raise it. If you wanted to send a pull request, you could. But anyone who's managed a forum knows that technical questions quickly become political questions. And luckily, we had a very strict code of conduct on our GitHub, and unluckily for me, I was its ruthless enforcer. And this is an impossible balance to get right for any open source project. You want to be welcoming to people, but you need to moderate. And that doesn't just mean getting rid of the spam. It means going, I think this conversation's about to go off the rails. Time to step in and stop it. Moderation is a professional skill and one I am not very good at. We ended up getting professional moderators in. It is a proper job. It is something that deserves to be paid for and treated professionally. You need to take this lesson, please. You need to invest in keeping your community safe, not just the people working on your project, the community as well. It keeps visitors safe, just keeps everything ticking along. You will get it wrong, and people will complain that you get it wrong, but that's, you just have to deal with the fallout for that. I've been a bit down on the comments. We had lots of positive comments. People like you sent in bug reports, pull requests. We had a bug bounty and people could do responsible disclosure. And every time someone left a comment saying, oh, wow, it's open source, brilliant, that went into a big bucket of evidence that we could regularly show to managers and politicians saying, look, people like that it's open source. And that was, you know, that was just so powerful. And you know, it gave the project so much momentum. And then just like that, it was over. And one day last year, my phone pinged with that message. And it was just like a punch to the gut. When you work on any big project, there is a temptation to go, I just want this to last forever. Yeah? You feel like that with your project sometimes? But if this app was still running today, it would mean that we had failed. One of the things you need to do is prepare to close your project. And that's difficult practically, you know, this is where the configs are and this is how to safely disable it. And it's difficult emotionally because people have put a lot of time and effort, blood, sweat and tears into it. It is ridiculously important work and sadly work I wasn't around for. A few months after the app launched, I returned to my old job. My COVID service was over. I had open sourced the app. Mission accomplished. Well, I don't think we are ever going to be truly post-pandemic, but with a combination of vaccines and change behaviours, and yes, the app, we turned a corner. And the legacy of open sourcing the app is a mixture of things. Firstly, it is this. The app worked. It did save lives. It reduced the strain on the NHS, and it continued to do so. And open sourcing the app was... Open sourcing the app was part of that. It was part of that. It wasn't the be-all and end-all, even I realised that. But if it hadn't been open source, well, I think there's a fair few people here who would have raised merry hell about it and would have, you know, security experts would have told people not to install it. I probably would have been one of them. There's going to be another pandemic, of that I'm certain, but we are now much better prepared to understand what technology works and what technology doesn't. We've all learned from this horrific experience, and I hope one of the lessons that the government has learned is open source is necessary. Any future government of whatever flavour will see open source as an indispensable part of what they do. By the way, it's not just the UK that learned these lessons. I spoke with my colleagues in loads of different countries, all going through the same journey. As far as I can tell, about 24 countries open source their COVID tracing apps. And as you can see, they used a wide variety. Not everyone used Google Apple. Some went with Bluetooth and other things. Not all of them used MIT. If there's anyone from Latvia here who would care to explain why you chose the Creative Commons license for your source code, I will buy you a drink. Now look, I wrote this talk a few weeks before the election was called, and this next slide is not intended to sway your vote in any way. This is a speech that Rishi Sunak, the Prime Minister of the UK, for now, gave a few weeks ago. This is the Prime Minister of the UK, for now, talking about being pro-open source. I mean, this is saying open source drives innovation. There must be a very high bar for any restrictions on open source. This is number 10, saying open source is a force for good. We are not relegated to paragraph 400 of a trade document. We're not, you know, just being ignored, that's for the spods. This is front and centre of a major speech. And this is the legacy of the COVID tracing app being open source. And that legacy is not mine, that is yours. That is due to every single person here who sent a message to their MP going, oh, it's open source, brilliant. Every single one who left a star or a comment on GitHub or left a comment on a blog or gave a pull request or something like that. But the lesson that I learned from this entire experience is that open source is about community, and it is you, the community, who saved the day. So thank you.